The next case is Robert Frick versus the Department of Veterans Affairs, 2021-2278. Is it Ms. Sunday?
Yes, Your Honor.
I noticed there's another Amanda on the brief, but that's not you.
Oh, it was me, Your Honor.
Since
briefing, I have since been married. So.
All right, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Please proceed.
May it please the Court, Amanda Sunday, Your Honors, appearing on behalf of disabled Army veteran Robert F. Frick. The question of law before this Court today is whether the Veterans Court may address a theory of clear and unmistakable error, or Q, that was brought before and unaddressed by the agency in the first instance. Under this court's jurisprudence, the answer to that question must be no.
Q is a question of fact, or at least application of law to fact, and clear and unmistakable isn't something that we deal with.
That is correct, Your Honor. And in Andre versus Principi, this court held that for the Veterans Court to conduct a review of a theory of Q in the first instance would be to run afoul of its statutory prohibition against fact-finding. And that is precisely what happened here. Now, the Secretary concedes...
Can I just ask this? So tell me if any part of this understanding is wrong. My understanding is that... before the board, you made a Q claim on presumption of soundness. Maybe you made a Q claim based on the presumption of aggravation. I tend to think not, but you went to the Veterans Court and said you did, right? That you had a presumption of aggravation-based Q claim before the board. And the Veterans Court, rather than saying you actually didn't raised that before the board, effectively said to you, well, let's assume that you made it. We don't see any harmless error in the board's failure to address it because legally it's must be rejected based on a perfectly affirmable board finding on the aggravation component of presumption of soundness. So there's no Veterans Court violation of Chenery by making its own fact findings. It was affirming the board's finding on an element that was necessary to any presumption of aggravation CUE theory you had. Tell me what's wrong with what I just said.
Your Honor, the legal error contained within the Veterans Court's analysis on the harmless error point is that at the time the Veterans Court's decision was issued, this court had decided George versus McDonough 2 months prior. And from that decision, we know that in 1961, the presumption of soundness had no second prong. So for the Veterans Court to state that an analysis on the second prong of the presumption of soundness can effectively cover review of any Q under the presumption of aggravation is legally incorrect.
So why isn't the relevant point that the board now, not in 1961, but when it, the current board decision mm-hmm. that went to the Veterans Court said, found that on the presumption of soundness, we can't see that there was an aggravation error way back when in 1961 on the aggravation element. And once the board, I forget what the date is, 2019 or something, makes that finding about the aggravation component of the presumption of soundness, why wasn't the Veterans Court acting correctly in saying, well, that has to defeat any current Q claim you have based on the presumption of aggravation?
Because, Your Honor, the Veterans Court's imputation of overlap between the two statutes is an incorrect interpretation of their function under this court's holding in Wagner versus Principi, under the Veterans Court's holding in Horn versus Shinseki, relying on Wagner to state that the term aggravation as used between the two statutes is mere linguistic overlap, that an inquiry under one statute does not carry relevance to the inquiry under the other. This court laid out a concise blueprint in Wagner for the agency to understand that it begins its inquiry as to the application of either presumption by scrutinizing the enlistment examination, and from there it goes one way or the other. The Veterans Court lays out the statutes as a Venn diagram with overlap on the aggravation element. However, it is different. Under the presumption of soundness, the agency is scrutinizing whether the government has appropriately proffered evidence of non-aggravation. In contrast, under 353, the government is scrutinizing whether the veteran has met the increase in disability component sufficient to come within the presumptive protection of the presumption of aggravation.
Well, counsel, so the burden is different when you consider the second prong of the soundness presumption versus the aggravation presumption. But haven't we said that the concept of aggravation is identical for both purposes?
Yes, Your Honor. This court has said that that concept is the same, but to your point, one is a rebuttal standard, and the other one is the veteran establishing an increase in disability component.
Right, but is your contention here that the Veterans Court erred in putting a burden in the wrong place, or is it just that they saw overlap between the two concepts of aggravation?
Your Honor, our position is that the Veterans Court, in effect, stated, we have evidence from the agency of non-aggravation sufficient under the second prong of soundness. Therefore, the board's error is harmless because Mr. Frick could have never established the increase in disability component sufficient to trigger the presumption of aggravation. This is not how the statutes were meant to function. This court was highly specific in Wagner that they are distinct and separate inquiries.
Okay, but where I'm getting lost is how is the board wrong? Give me a sense as to how it could be that just because the government was able to meet its burden on the second prong, that it doesn't logically follow inexorably that your client couldn't meet his burden if we were applying the presumption of aggravation.
Through the analysis of the Veterans Court, which we now know from George was incorrect, the Veterans Court was stating that clear and unmistakable evidence of non-aggravation had been proffered by the government sufficient to rebut the second prong of soundness and completely curtail application of the presumption of aggravation. The reason it is so critical that these inquiries be kept separate and distinct is because a veteran would never be able to establish the increase in disability component under the presumption of aggravation with the way the Veterans Court has framed this analysis. The veteran would be up against clear and unmistakable evidence of non-aggravation from the first inquiry, the presumption of soundness inquiry. This would, in every case, curtail application of the presumption of aggravation. And so it cannot be harmless error for the agency to simply address one theory of Q that was brought before it under the presumption of soundness. And Judge Toronto, I understand your concern regarding the Q pleadings. However, this was the one point over which the Veterans Court exercised de novo review, whether or not Q was sufficiently pled with respect to both theories. Had the Veterans Court deemed it that Mr. Frick had not pled Q under the presumption of aggravation, it would have had to dismiss without prejudice. And so the Veterans Court...
So I think what I'm about to ask is just a different version of what we've been talking about. So suppose we were to say the Veterans Court was mistaken in addressing any Q claim based on presumption of aggravation, even though you asked it to do so, and so should have said there just was never a Q claim pled to the board. You can now go back and you can actually go and plead it, in fact. Let's suppose that. what could you say in that that wouldn't be necessarily defeated by the, you know, final adjudication of rejection of a Q claim based on presumption of soundness?
Your Honor, I want to clarify your questions. I can answer it most appropriately. Are you stating if the Veterans Court's decision were to stand, what would...
Let's suppose you now had a Q claim of presumption of aggravation that you could make fresh. Wouldn't that necessarily be defeated by your current loss on the presumption of soundness?
No, Your Honor, it would not.
So?
Because the inquiries under 311 and 353, as they were in 1961, are separate, we're reviewing the agency's decision through the lens of how those statutes were at the time. We know that under 311, evidence of non-aggravation was required to rebut it. Under 353, however, if the increase in disability component is shown by the veteran, it can only be rebutted, by a specific finding that any increase in disability was due to its natural progression. The Veterans Court has since interpreted the specific finding element to be even more onerous than clear and unmistakable evidence. So a 353 pleading, if brought today or tomorrow, would not be defeated by a loss on the presumption of soundness point.
And the fact that we're looking through the lens of clear and unmistakable error, in which it has to be, I forget the phrase, but something like, manifest that the bottom line result would have been different. That doesn't change the analysis? The analysis you just gave?
It does not, Your Honor. And I hesitate to invite this court, just as we believe the Veterans Court shouldn't have done, to review the Q pleadings and to review the 1961 RO decision. However, a manifestly different outcome, it is Mr. Frick's position, would have been shown had 353 been properly applied, because the undisputed facts in this case do not show that the government ever made a specific finding of any increase in disability being due to its natural progression. Now, the Veterans Court's primary error here was its plenary review of the RO's decision for Q. And its analysis is contained in the appendix at pages 10 to 11. This contains all of the hallmarks of fact-finding. The Veterans Court surveyed the evidence of record extant in 1961, service treatment records, separation examination, to hold that on its face, the 1961 RO decision does not appear to contain error, and it also held that the evidence weighs against a finding of Q. It is appropriate for the Board of Veterans Appeals to have made such a finding with respect to the presumption of aggravation. It is legally untenable for the Veterans Court to have made such a finding. As this court held in Andre, doing so runs afoul of the statutory prohibition against fact-finding and renders meaningless the Veterans Court's jurisdictional statute requiring a final board decision.
I may be completely confused, but didn't you ask the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims to do exactly what they did?
Your Honor, the Veterans Court, in the motion for reconsideration, was, I suppose, informed that the board had never addressed this theory of Q. Under Sandell versus West, the proper recourse at that juncture would have been for the Veterans Court to remand to the board.
And is remand what you asked for at that time in your motion for reconsideration?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, it is.
You were not asking the court to go ahead and do this analysis?
No, Your Honor. No, that would have been improper for the court to preside over this in the first instance. Now, while the veteran...
Counsel, most of your rebuttal time is gone. Do you wish to save it or use it?
I will preserve. Thank you very much.
We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Koenig, or is it Koenig?
It's Koenig, Your Honor.
Koenig, all right, thank you.
The Americanized version.
Oh, umlaut.
Yeah. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The Veterans Court decision in this case should be affirmed because, as Your Honors have already suggested during this argument, what the Veterans Court did in this case was entirely appropriate. The Veterans Court reviewed the findings made by the Board of Veterans Appeals and concluded that based on those findings, that there was sufficient support to in the record to reject the Q claim newly raised by Mr. Frick before the Veterans Court. As Your Honor suggested,
is it enough for the Veterans Court to have said that there was sufficient support for a rejection of a presumption of aggravation claim to be made? That sounds like a significant step short of what a harmless error analysis would require, which I think would be, given the finding the board made, there could not possibly be a favorable finding on presumption of aggravation.
Oh, well, Your Honor, the Veterans Court, I don't believe, specifically made a finding as to whether Mr. Frick had raised the Q claim of the presumption of aggravation before the board, but found that in light of Mr. Frick's insistence that the Veterans Court address the presumption of aggravation, that the findings that were made by the board, the findings as to the RO's decision on the aggravation prong, were sufficient to make the legal conclusion that the presumption of aggravation was not implicated here, and that any legal error.
Just because I'm balking for the moment at your use of the word sufficient. Sometimes there's evidence that would be sufficient for a fact finder to find one way, but you don't know whether the fact finder would in fact make that finding that way. And I don't think that would be enough to say, well, it's harmless error that they never made the fact finding. You have to say the evidence is such that that fact finding could be made only this way.
Yes, Your Honor. And the Veterans Court, in reviewing the board's decision, concluded that because the concepts of aggravation are the same, that the findings that the board made on aggravation as to the presumption of soundness, as you say, were conclusive as to the presumption of aggravation, and that those relying on those findings, that the Veterans Court could in fact rely on those findings by the board in making a legal conclusion that Mr. Frick had not implicated the presumption of aggravation.
Can you address what Ms. Sunday said about how there is at least a difference in burden of proof between these two presumptions, and I think she was arguing that that actually makes a crucial difference here.
Your Honor, we agree with the appellant that there is a different burden as to the two presumptions. When in the presumption of soundness, the aggravation is a second prong, and as counsel said, the presumption of soundness can only be rebutted with clear and unmistakable evidence that the VA or the VA has to present clear and unmistakable evidence of a lack of aggravation. Under the presumption of aggravation, before the presumption can even be implicated in the first place, there must be some evidence of an increase in disability. And then the presumption of aggravation would kick in to presume that that aggravation that has already been shown was due to, there's a presumption that it was due to service, unless there's a specific finding that it was due to the natural progression of the disease. And so the presumption of aggravation includes some burden shifting where the veteran has to first demonstrate some increase in disability before the presumption kicks in at all, and then the VA can still rebut the presumption that the aggravation was caused by service. Here, As the Veterans Court found, the findings in the record by the RO in 1961 and by the board in 2020, those findings did not establish that Mr. Frick had ever demonstrated any increase in disability. So there was no need for either the Veterans Court or the board to make a specific finding of that it was due to the natural progression of the disease, because the presumption didn't in fact kick in the first place. Instead, there was simply no evidence of aggravation. And that evidence of no aggravation was found to be sufficient to defeat the presumption of soundness, and it is also sufficient to conclusively demonstrate that there can be no benefit or no presumption of aggravation.
I think you told us, if I caught it correctly, that Mr. Frick insisted that the Veterans Court address his Q claim with respect to presumption of aggravation. Did I follow that correctly?
In the sense that the appellant did seek reconsideration specifically on that ground.
Okay. So then address, I think Ms. Sunday told us he wasn't insisting that they address the claim on the merits, he was insisting on a remand.
Your Honor, I believe, just to look, the appellant's brief is in, before the Veterans Court, is in the appendix at page 107 to 111 on this issue. The appellant does ask for a remand, but as the Veterans Court decision on reconsideration noted, there was no need for a remand because, again, all of the specific findings that would be necessary for the board to make were already made by the board's decision in 2020.
And the board or the court may or may not be right about that, but your contention that he insisted that they not remand, is that accurate or is that not accurate?
Well, maybe that was a little bit of a strong statement that he insisted, but he did file for reconsideration, again, specifically on the presumption of aggravation, despite not having raised it before the board. In fact, Mr. Frick specifically disclaimed a presumption of aggravation claim in his briefs before the board, and that's in the appendix at page 71, where he specifically states that's not his argument on cue before the board, at least. Which is why we've argued in the briefs that to the extent the court disagrees that the Veterans Court should have addressed the issue in the first place, the appropriate remedy here would not be to remand, but would in fact just be to vacate just that portion of the Veterans Court decision and allow Mr. Frick to raise a new Q claim on the presumption of aggravation.
And that's because he did not raise it originally at the board level.
That's correct, Your Honor, yes. But if in the event that a new Q claim is raised, we would be looking at the same concept of aggravation, the same factual findings that were made by the RO, the same medical evidence that's in the record at pages 42 and 44 of the appendix. Those same findings of non-aggravation would be what the board would look at and what the board did look at in concluding that there could be no aggravation under the presumption of soundness, which in this case at least is also conclusive of the presumption of aggravation. We're not here to suggest that in every instance a finding as to the presumption of soundness would necessarily defeat a claim on the presumption of aggravation, but where the RO made a finding that there simply was no evidence of aggravation, that it was found both to be...
This is the RO in 1961.
That's correct, Your Honor, yes. Where that finding was made, that there was no evidence of aggravation, it was found to be, and is not on appeal here, was found to be conclusive of the presumption of soundness, and is sufficient, and is conclusive of the fact that the veteran has not implicated the presumption of aggravation here.
Is it true that in 1961 there was no second prong on the presumption of soundness, and if so, does that affect anything about what we should do here?
We don't disagree that the George versus McDonough case, which I happen to have argued before the court, was about that whether there was a second prong or whether there should have been a second prong in 1961. But Your Honor, I don't believe that is that has any relevance to this case, because it's not clear from the RO's decision whether the RO was considering the presumption of soundness and or the presumption of aggravation. Rather, the RO simply made factual findings that there was no aggravation, and it is those factual findings of no aggravation that the board relied on, and that the Veterans Court, in finding that the board was not arbitrary and capricious in its decision, was relying on. And so those factual findings, it doesn't matter whether they were going to a presumption of soundness prong or whether they were findings made that were unnecessary to be made or whether they were going to the presumption of aggravation. There's no evidence in the record as to what legal question the RO was asking. It was simply making a factual finding that there was no aggravation. And we believe that finding is...
not clear and unmistakable error.
Demonstrate clear and unmistakable error. Yeah, there's the board, just to get all of the standards correct, the Veterans Court was reviewing whether it was arbitrary and capricious for the board to have concluded that there was no clear and unmistakable error in the original 1961 decision. And the board so concluded based on those same factual findings, and the Veterans Court concluded that it was not arbitrary and capricious to have relied on those findings. And we would also argue that the Veterans Court be affirmed on that basis. The Tadlock case and Chenery simply don't apply when there are sufficient findings in the record for the Veterans Court to have, when there are findings in the record that would support affirmance, the Veterans Court does not violate Chenery. And in Tadlock, the Veterans Court is only prohibited from making de novo factual findings, which we do not believe were being made in this case.
Can I ask you this question? So suppose it were clear to us that before the board, no presumption of aggravation-based Q claim had been made. Is it a jurisdictional problem for the Veterans Court to have said anything about it? Jurisdictional in the strong sense that it had no discretion even when asked to say something about it? In a kind of an Article III jurisdictional sense. That,
Your Honor, I'm not trying to avoid the question, but a Q claim is required to be brought with specificity. This court's decision in Garcia and Andrews suggests that Q claims should each new Q claim needs to be brought with specificity, and. So to the extent the court disagrees or agrees with the government that Mr. Frick had not raised the Q claim as the presumption of aggravation before the board, we believe that it is jurisdictional that there be a board decision on what the Veterans Court is deciding. However, here in this case, given the overlapping factual question, we would argue that the Veterans Court did not lack jurisdiction in this particular instance solely due to the overlap in the factual findings. As a general matter, yes, we agree that the Veterans Court would not have jurisdiction to consider a new Q claim that was not raised before the board. But given that in deciding a Q claim on the presumption of aggravation, they would be looking to the exact same factual findings of the RO relying on this exact same medical evidence that's already in the record in this case.
So when the veteran goes to the Veterans Court and says, I raised a particular Q claim, a presumption of aggravation claim, which I take it Mr. Frick went to the Veterans Court and said that, and then asked the Veterans Court on the assertion actually, that we did raise the claim, asked the Veterans Court to remand that because the board didn't really address it. That was kind of the argument. Does the board lack do we get to decide for ourselves whether the veteran's premise that he actually did raise this presumption of aggravation Q claim to the board is so plainly wrong that the Veterans Court lacked jurisdiction to say, okay, on your premise, I will proceed to consider your request for a remand, but I'm going to reject it because you couldn't possibly win on remand, so any failure by the board to address it is harmless.
If I followed that question, Your Honor, this court can rely on or can affirm the Veterans Court decision if there are clear and unmistakable findings in the record that would support affirmance. I don't think that I'm just trying to think through. If the veteran did not raise
Would we defer in any way to the Veterans Court's assessment of what the veteran raised to the board?
Well, Your Honor, this court would lack jurisdiction to review the Veterans Court's harmless error analysis. So to the extent that the Veterans Court was conducting a harmless error analysis as to the board's findings, I think that that finding would be outside of this court's jurisdiction to redo that finding. And we've argued that in the briefs. But at the end of the day, all of the findings that are necessary to make a determination on the presumption of aggravation are included within the record and have been made by the appropriate tribunals. So unless Your Honors have further questions, we would ask the court to affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Cooney. Ms. Sunday, just to even up, we'll give you 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. On remedy.
3 minutes.
So on remedy, the Secretary's suggestion of vacator without remand is a unique one. And in briefing, there was no authority, precedential authority or persuasive guidance cited to for this prescribed relief. Now, insofar as the Secretary raises concerns with whether or not Q is appropriately pled before the board, this court has presided over that question before in a case that may provide persuasive guidance here, and that case is George versus Wilkie. And there the Secretary also...
The George that just went to the Supreme Court? Or a different George?
A different George,
okay.
Yes, a non-precedential George.
The George that your opposing counsel argued.
No, respectfully, it was not. It was a different George. Yes, Your
George
Honor.
The second.
Yes, George the second. Yes, and in this case, and again, George versus Wilkie, not George versus McDonough. This court presided over a similar situation where the Secretary raised an identical concern. Was this Q theory ever pled before the board? Did the Veterans Court have jurisdiction to address it or not? The relief effectuated by this court was still vacator with remand for the Veterans Court to determine its jurisdiction under Andre and its jurisdictional statute. Now, our position is that this court can go even further than that, that this Q theory was pled before the board. And I do have a citation to the appendix at page 64 in Mr. Frick's Q pleading where he mimicked the language from section 353 and raised the contention that a pre-existing disability that he had was aggravated in severity beyond its natural progression during active service. This is the exact language from 353, not 311, a first prong or a non-existent second prong, but from 353. And so, again, we believe it was properly pled before the agency. And so the Veterans Court's appropriate remedy would have been to remand for the agency to address it in the first instance. Now, while Andre guides the legal error in this case, it's our position that Tadlock versus McDonough guides the remedy. And there, this court expressly held the Veterans Court may not make de novo factual findings and wrap it up under the guise of harmless error, that that is squarely within the province of the agency. Mr. Frick raised a Q theory before the agency. He is statutorily entitled to an answer from the agency on the theory that was pled. And so we ask this court to vacate the Veterans Court's decision and remand with instructions for it to instruct the agency to address it in the first instance.
That's one. Thank you. Question. Possibly.
Yes.
Sorry. At page 867, it seems to me your client made it clear he wasn't raising a presumption of aggravation claim. The middle of A67, he says the VA failed to carry its burden to show that Mr. Frick's bilateral shoulder impairments either pre-existed service or were not aggravated by service. That's the presumption of soundness test, is it not?
Yes, Your Honor. So two theories of Q were contained within one pleading. One was introduced with respect to the presumption of soundness, which is what you are quoting, and one was brought with respect to the presumption of aggravation, which was referred to on page 67 in the language that I mentioned earlier.
You said 64, I believe.
Oh, I apologize, Your Honor.
And that's a statement of facts. I'm reading from arguments and authority, and he goes on to cite presumption of soundness cases. I'm not clear on how we could read this as him raising a presumption of aggravation claim.
Between pages 72 and 73, Your Honor, is where the in the alternative argument was raised. The evidence cited to by Mr. Frick on page 72 and 73 is indicative of the increase in disability component sufficient to establish the presumption under section 353. Thank you.
So it's 72, 73, not 64, that you that supports your contention that there was a presumption of aggravation to claim for the board.
Yes, Your Honor. I hesitate to rewrite any pleadings or attempt to misconstrue any pleadings before this court, but the statement on page 64 does mimic the precise language from 353. And then on pages 72 to 73 is where the in the alternative theory of Q was raised. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.